17. Wedge watched on the monitors as Luzonkia's starfighter screamed back down into the atmosphere, then began escorting the last personnel transports up. With the transports was a small private yacht, a converted blast boat that carried Wollum Chair, Tam Elgren, and a boy named Tark. Wedge wished them success in staying away from the Yuuzhan Vong, now and forever. Yella stood by the door, waiting. Other than Wedge, she was the last person in the Biotics Building's operations center. "You can't do much more here, Wedge. Time to go." "Not quite yet. As long as there's a chance their Peace Brigade friends are trying to crack our comm traffic, them knowing that I'm still here could still cause them to wonder why." He gave her a conciliatory look. "I'll be along. I have a shuttle standing by." "Come on. You go. Now, don't force me to make an order of it." Married long enough to know where duty absolutely defined Wedge's actions, Yella gave an exasperated shake of her head. She came over for one last kiss. "Don't get hurt."
"You either."
"I want you to be able to retire again."
"You too."
"I love you." He kissed her a second time.
"I love you too.
And I plan to prove it over and over again." He smiled against the sick feeling that suddenly roiled within him, the fear that there would be no over and over again, that this was the last time she would see him. "Now go." She went. He returned to the sensor board and forced the conversation, the sensation, out of his mind. Whether it was a valid premonition or just ordinary fear, he had a job to do. He watched as the biotics complex's starfighter defenses continued to crumble, as Yuuzhan Vong air and ground forces continued their approach. Charat Kral led his squadron around toward Domain Hull. His villipages told him that Luzonkia was coming, and that Jaina Solo's squadron was among those escorting her. He was confused. He didn't like being confused. No Yuuzhan Vong warrior ever endured being confused. The only appropriate response was to kill something. The elite squadrons guarding Luzonkia fought with tremendous skill. Chulkong Law made sure that the patterns flown by the blaze bugs, showing the development of that conflict, would be seared into the memory of the worldship's brain. He knew he would enjoy watching it again and again. Coral Skipper squadrons entering that combat zone emerged depleted, tattered. When they emerged at all. Reports of his sensor advisors indicated that the Coral Skipper assaults were taking their toll, New Republic pilots were falling, and Luzonkia was being taken to pieces. Despite the fact that an unusual amount of power was being directed into her shields, the ship's weapons batteries were silent, and great chunks of metal were said to be tearing free of the superstructure under the constant pounding from Coral Skippers and capital ships that ventured close enough to strike. Wedge charged out of the operations center. The biotics building shook with the pounding it received from distant plasma cannons, impact so loud that he couldn't hear his own boots on the duracrete floor. Chunks of the ceiling rained down. He threw his arms over his head for protection, catching a blow on his right wrist from descending debris. He made it up the staircase to the ground level without seeing any other personnel. That gave him a grim satisfaction. No one had managed to outstubborn him, to defy his orders in order to make sure that Wedge had company on his escape. It was a little comforting, but the thought that he might be the last member of the New Republic standing on Borleos was oddly unsettling. Through the transparent steel in the doors at the end of the main hall, he could see distant flashes, narrow red streaks heading one way at the speed of light, mere wobbly orange-red streaks headed the other. Clear evidence that Wedge's last forces were still fighting their delaying action. Then he slammed through the doors, emerging onto the kill zone, and could see that the engagement was continuing at every degree of the compass. The kill zone itself was full of craters and destroyed vehicles. Everything that had been fit to fly was up in space now. The vehicles too wrecked to lift off had been destroyed by Wedge's engineers, standard operating procedure, though the Yuuzhan Vong were not in the habit of studying captured technology. Some of them had been accidentally hit by distant plasma cannon fire aimed at the biotics building. There were no functional vehicles to be seen. No functional vehicles. Where was his shuttle? Then he recognized it. A heap of burning metal, whose shape suggested it had once been a Lambda-class shuttle. Wedge grimaced. A pilot had died, waiting for him. It was another tally mark for the list. The list he'd once hoped he'd retired, the one he carried in his heart. He shoved the thought to one side. He'd join that list in a minute if he didn't act. Punctuating his thought, a plasma cannon projectile hit the biotics building far over his head, plowing through ferrocrete and transferosteel, sending sharp lethal chunks down toward him. Wedge sprinted away from the building's face. There was no purpose in going into the main docking bay, except perhaps to hide. It was open, and he could see from here that nothing more useful than a small cargo lifter was left within it. The special operations docking bay was almost intact, though, and still closed. Wedge hoped they hadn't booby-trapped it. He reached the main door, tapped his authorization code into the keypad, and then flinched as he heard the biotics building take a hit from something big. The force of the explosion, though weakened by distance, pushed him into the door. He spun to look and watched as the building folded over like a fighter punched once too often in the midsection. The top portion at the center tumbled down onto the kill zone where he'd been standing just seconds before. The docking bay door ground open. He backed in and spun, eyes trying to pierce the darkness of the interior, even as the overhead lights began to flicker on. The special operations crew had left behind a land speeder that looked as though it had been slow-roasted for the eating pleasure of some alien giant. Nearby was a half-finished pipe fighter, one they'd been assembling in case any of the others failed during their bogus tests. And then Wedge's heart soared off to the right, near the still-opening door, where the lights were last to come to full brightness, was an X-Wing. There was no astromech waiting beside it or tucked in place behind the cockpit, but otherwise it looked intact, its cockpit raised as if in greeting. The vehicle's surface was scratched and burned everywhere, but there were a dozen shiny patches in place on the hull, not yet painted to match the snub fighter's color scheme, and the canopy was gleaming, unmarred, obviously brand new. Wedge raced to it and climbed up into the cockpit, adrenaline letting him move like a man half his age. He'd commenced the emergency power start procedure before gravity had quite settled him into the pilot's couch, and brought up the vehicle's assignment and diagnostics before lowering the canopy and buckling in. The text board on his control panel swam into letters before it was even at full brightness. INCOM T-65-J, X-Wing, identifier number 103430, current pilot, Flight Officer Coral Beckham, current designation, Black Moon 11, current astromech, R2Z13, Plug. Too bad you're not along for the ride, Plug. Without an astromech, Wedge would be able to perform only the most basic in-system navigation. He wouldn't be able to plot any interstellar routes. But if he could get up to his forces in this vehicle, accept a broadcast nav course, or land aboard one of the capital ships, he'd be fine. He triggered a command on his data pad, sending an authorization code to the X-Wing. Code not recognized. Authorization failed. The diagnostics board was now up. Power, shield, weapon, and thruster systems seemed to be fine, but the board showed unrepaired damage to the snub fighter's computer and communication systems. Wedge swore. The time pressures that had forced the mechanics to abandon this vehicle before it was quite repaired might have doomed him. That point was accentuated by a new sound, the whoomph of some large craft making an awkward landing near the special ops docking bay. No, it was adjacent to the docking bay. Wedge saw the back wall of the building, hardy sheet metal, bow in from the displaced air. Wedge scrolled down in his data pad to personnel records, called up the details of Flight Officer Coral Beckham, and transmitted his authorization code. Authorization accepted. Power up of the remainder of vehicle systems commenced. The docking bay door was now fully open, spilling sunlight across Wedge and the X-Wing. Wedge saw a detachment of Yuuzhan Vong warriors, 20 or more of them, passed by the bay, headed toward the biotics building. The data board indicated that two engines were up, three, four, then thrusters and repulsors reported ready. Lasers came online, and the bar indicating shield readiness struggled to become a solid green. A Yuuzhan Vong warrior skidded around the corner of the special ops docking bay and halted, facing the X-Wing, his posture suggesting surprise. A moment later, nine or ten more raced up behind him and turned toward Wedge. Wedge gave them a smile, humorless, feral. He flicked his lasers over to stutterfire and sprayed the crowd of enemy warriors, saw some of them dive back the way they'd come, saw others caught in the beams. Even set on stutterfire, where each beam was fired at the lowest useful intensity available to an X-Wing weapon, the lasers were meant for vehicles, not individuals. Striking the Yuuzhan Vong, the beams superheated flesh past the point of cooking, past the point of boiling, straight to the state of gas or even plasma. Warriors hit by the beams simply exploded, torsos reduced to nothingness, limbs hurled in all directions. Wedge grimaced, then fired up his repulsors and thrusters. In a smooth motion, his X-Wing lifted, side-slipped out from under the docking bay roof, and turned the direction opposite that from which the warriors had come. He kicked his thrusters over to full and raced at maximum acceleration away from the docking bay and crumbling biotics building. Over his shoulder, he could see the Yuuzhan Vong troop carrier, an egg-shaped thing, towering over the docking bay, squadron after squadron of warriors emerging from it at a dead run. The troop carrier opened up on his X-Wing, sending glowing plasma balls after him, but Wedge twitched the vehicle to port, and the flood of burning material fell into the jungle beneath him. There wouldn't be time for a checklist, even an abbreviated one. He had to get up into space and rejoin his forces. He switched his X-Wing comm unit over to command frequency. Black Moon 11 to Mon Mothma. Black Moon 11 to Mon Mothma, come in. The unit came alive with comm traffic. Wedge recognized the voice of Tycho, directing starfighter squadrons, of Jaina issuing commands to the twin sons, of many other officers under his command. But no one responded. He put on a little altitude, preparatory to making the run to space. Black Moon 11 to anyone, please respond. Nothing. He growled. He'd have to rely on his own sensors and instincts to choose the best course off-world, and could easily blunder into squadrons of incoming coral skippers. Well, those were the breaks. He could either complain or prepare. He pulled back on his yoke, and then flashed past a small Corellian freighter, a scarred sky-blue YT-2400. He knew the ship, which was far newer than the similar Millennium Falcon, but still a rickety thing held together by wire and meanness. In the glimpse he had of it, before leaving it behind, he thought that it looked mostly intact, despite smoke pouring out of one of the engine housings, and believed he'd seen people outside it moving. He began to loop around. Black Moon 11, this is Amun Swooper. Come in, please. Wedge frowned. How did they know his designation? Then it made sense. He couldn't broadcast voice, but his transponder must still be working, must still be sending out this X-Wing's identifier code for friend or foe sensor recognition. Amun Swooper, you have Black Moon 11. Go. Black Moon 11, come in. This is Amun Swooper. Please reply. Wedge passed over the downed freighter again, this time at reduced velocity. He could see men and women atop the freighter, illuminated by the sparks and glow of welding torches. At this range, he pulled his comm link out of his breast pocket and thumbed it on. Amun Swooper, this is Black Moon 11. Are you receiving me now? Barely, but we have you. We were downed by plasma cannon fire, but we've almost got a patch ready on our engines. We can lift in a couple of minutes, but the unit that shot us down is pretty close, north-northwest. Can you hold them back for us? I'll give you your 2 minutes, maybe more. My comm board is shot, so if I don't respond to further communications, don't take it personally. Black Moon 11 out. Thanks, 11. Amun Swooper out. Wedge reduced his speed still further, then looped around to pass over the freighter on a north-northwest course. In seconds, he saw the enemy unit Ahmud Swooper had spoken of, approaching through a patch of thick grasses surrounded by jungle. There were a dozen Yuuzhan Vong infantry, 2 dozen reptoid slave warriors, 1 coral skipper, and what appeared to be an unwounded rockamot. This one tall and lean, rather than mountainous, and with only half the armament of a full-sized version, but still plenty against a lightly armed freighter, or an X-wing, for that matter. Even as he calculated their numbers, Wedge switched over to stutter fire and sprayed lasers across their position. Warriors and reptoids went down, and grass ignited in front of the rockamot as he fired. Then he flashed over their position, plasma fire from the rockamot following, and saw on his sensor board as the coral skipper rose in pursuit. He put all discretionary vehicle power into his rear shields for a moment, heard thumps over his audio as his sensors informed him that plasma ejecta had hit the shields and been stopped. It had taken 6 X-Wings and a hidden cache of explosives to kill the last rockamot they'd fought against. This one might be only half as powerful as the last, but Wedge was a third as powerful as the previous force. The odds were bad. On the other hand, Han Solo had made a generation of people think that Corellians ignored the odds, no matter how long, and Wedge was as Corellian as Solo was. Then the idea hit him, and Wedge managed another humorless grin. The coral skipper hot on his tail, Wedge looped around until he was approaching the rockamont and its covering troops from a cross angle to its path. He fired again, spraying lasers indiscriminately into the grasses to the left of the rockamont, scattering the Yuuzhan Vong warriors and reptoids there. From here he could see the rockamont's legs as it moved stolidly toward the freighter, could time them in their steady, docile motions. Plasma rained toward him from the rockamont, from the coral skipper behind. Wedge sideslipped and continued to fire into the grasses, setting them ablaze, kicking up gouts of dirt and steam. Now his vision was useless, but his sensors still showed the huge mass of the rockamont, distorted by the heat from the fire. Wedge dropped to grass-top level, heard scrapes and thumps as his lower hull was grazed by foliage, perhaps even by irregularities in the terrain. Ahead he could see the very top of the rockamont, as its plasma cannons elevated, preparing to catch his underside as he popped up over them. He flipped an overhead switch, and his S-foils closed from the X-shaped firing position to cruise position. And as he entered the zone where the grasses were blazing, he twitched his yoke down, then up. He had the barest flash of rockamont legs to his left and right, a looming shadow over him, and then he was rising. For a bare moment, no plasma came streaking after him. In going under the rockamont, in emerging low from the wrong side, he'd thrown the creature into confusion. He switched his S-foils back into firing position as he glided. In that moment, the pursuing coral skipper roared through the fire and saw the rockamont immediately before it. The pilot must have panicked. Over his shoulder, Wedge saw the bow of the coral skipper wobble as the pilot was torn between following Wedge under or bouncing over, and that moment of hesitation doomed him. The skip's bow rose, and at several hundred kilometers per hour, the skip plowed into the flank of the rockamont. There was no flash of light, no noise of the impact. Wedge was racing away too fast for the sound to catch him. There was only the grisly image of the coral skipper tearing through the creature, emerging in a different, narrower shape, the rockamont being flung in 2 pieces away from the point of impact, the remains of the coral skipper arching up in a ballistic course and then gradually down toward the ground. Wedge looped around to mop up. There was unaccustomed tension in his arm, and he realized that he was gripping the yoke too hard. "I'm not going to say it," he told himself. "I'm not. I'm getting too old for this." Lusankia was visible to the naked eye now, a tiny needle pointed straight for Domain Hull. Chulkong Law squinted up at it, irritable, his diminished eyesight insufficient to provide him with any details of what he was seeing. He gestured at an aide, who correctly interpreted the non-specific motion and stroked the enormous circular lens in the center of the command chamber ceiling. It distorted, stretching details at its periphery into blurriness, magnifying the enemy ship's image until it dominated the scene. The ship had already sustained tremendous damage. The deck plating everywhere was torn, rough like a road that had once been smooth and then had been traveled over by herds of rockamots with spike weapons on their feet. Flame jetted out from its hull in dozens of places. Its guns were mostly silent. Chulkong lost only two batteries that were still active, and they seemed to be firing at random. They posed little threat to his coral skippers. But there were still squadrons of enemy starfighters out there, mostly concentrated at Luzonkia's stern, maintaining a savage defense over that area of the ship. Kazakh Bull moved to stand beside him. "Our pilots report that the Luzonkia abomination is almost destroyed. Lack of responsiveness indicates that most of her crew must be dead and most of her weapons eliminated. She will not be able to send her lasers and bolts against us." Chulkong Law carefully positioned his feet so that the blow would not cause him to lose his balance. That would be unseemly. Then he swung his arm. His Von Doon crab armor correctly interpreted his haste and snapped his arm forward. His armored forearm cracked across the back of Kazdok Bull's helmet, sending his second-in-command staggering forward. Kazdok Bull regained his balance and spun. Chulkong Law could see the younger officer's features graduate from an expression of anger to one of surprise. "You see, but you do not understand," Chulkong Law said. "They never intended to use their weapons upon us." "Oh." The younger officer's voice became unreasonably reasonable, a type of mockery useful in that it could be persuasively denied afterward. "So this was simply an infidel sacrifice, an apology? They are saying, 'We are sorry for being bad. Here, have our greatest weapon.'" Chulkong Law offered him a smile nearly devoid of teeth. "You persist in being an idiot. I am proud to say I did not train you. You would have been my most repellent failure. Did you not notice? They never protected their weapons. They only protected their engines. What does that tell you?" The younger officer scowled. "That they wanted the thing to get here quickly?" "That their engines are their weapons. Are you sure you are not an Uglith masker with nothing actually inside?" Kazdok Bull ignored the undisguised insult. "Then their intention is to ram us?" "Wisdom, at last. So, even an Uglith masker can learn a little when submerged in knowledge." "Then we must make sure the abomination is incapable of reaching us, of maneuvering adequately to ram us." "Very good. Issue the orders, Uglith masker."
Three coral skippers, all that remained of the latest wave, turned and sped away. Doubtless they'd regroup with reinforcements in a minute and return. Luke checked his sensor and status boards. He was now two pilots down, and the remainder of his units were battered. He had some plasma scoring on his starboard top S-wing and engine. "Black Moon leader to squadron," he said. "We have a moment. Anyone with stripped shields, now's the time to commence a power restart." He goosed his thruster to come up behind and below Luzonkia's port side thruster banks. He kept well to port of them. This position gave him a good view of the Yuuzhan Vong worldship ahead. "Anything I should know?" "We have Black Moon 11 back on the status board." That was the voice of Lieutenant Nenora Burt. "Black Moon 10, the squad's new communications specialist. A freelance smuggler, she'd loaned her expertise and her freighter, record time, to the cause of this operation. Her freighter had been half-destroyed during the taking of Borlias, and the job had been completed above Coruscant weeks later. Now, with a new military officer's commission, she was still fighting the good fight." Luke glanced at his status board. It did indeed indicate that Black Moon 11 was active. Distance and direction suggested that the X-Wing was on Borleos. No way. That was Black Moon 5. Coral's in Bacta somewhere. I saw the medics haul him off.
Doesn't matter, Luke said. Concentrate on what's at hand.
Black Moon Leader, this is Twin Suns Leader.
Go, Goddess.
Shara's detecting skips regrouping in a bunch of different units, all at a uniform distance away from Luzonkia.
We'll set up for a new wave, then. Thanks, Exalted One.
Finally, Jaina could see the incoming squadrons on her sensors. There were a lot of them, 8 groupings at least, and the 3 squadrons at Luzonkia's stern were losing strength.
Time for a goddess chase, don't you think, Char?
Ooh, your words thrill me, Great One.
Don't be so thrilled that you screw up.
Ooh, your supportiveness thrills me. Get back to business, Char.
Right.
Char was silent for a long moment, during which the units of coral skippers got closer, moving in from all directions. Then,
nearest Dovin Basal minefield is ahead and to port.
The goddess should aim for that. Biggie, when do the incoming units get close enough to recognize us by sight?
40 seconds. But if the goddess goes off straight toward that minefield, she'll pass close enough for them to see her.
Ooh, right.
Adjusting course. Twin Suns Leader, prepare yourself for the chase. 3, 2, 1.
Chase. A missile roared away from Twin Suns 10, streaking off to port at nearly a 90-degree angle to their current course, aiming toward the largest gap between any of the inbound squadrons. Jaina activated her gravitic signature and transponder switches. Abruptly, her designation on the sensor board went to Twin Suns 9, while the outbound missile, just as instantaneously, became Twin Suns 1. There was a momentary wobble in the movements of skip squadrons to port. Then 4 of the squads in that direction changed course, converging on the missile.
Well done, Char,
Jaina said. When she'd switched to the Twin Suns 9 identity, her comm system should have activated a program to alter her vocal characteristics, making her sound like an older woman, one with a deeper voice.
Thanks, Nine, and nice to have Leader gone. She's so bossy.
Kip cut into the conversation. Heads up, we still have incoming contacts to starboard. Prepare to rebel borders. Break by shield trios on my command. 3, 2, 1, break! While Beelyath held position within the Twin Suns 10-11-12 shield trio, Char kept his attention on his special sensor and comm boards. The distant missile codenamed Goddess, and now, courtesy of Silgall's biotechnical magic, characterized by the precise gravitic signature of Jaina's X-Wing, had onboard computers and logic programs that allowed it to execute its mission on its own, but Char could still feed it priority updates. He switched to a wireframe view of local space as the goddess missile and the coral skippers, pursuing it, entered the Dovin Basal minefield. The green wireframe superimposed on the scene showed the spatial distortions caused by the mines and their gravitic influence on their surroundings. Char kept the missile speed down to that of an X-Wing standard cruise rate, allowing the pursuing skips to gain on it. So far, they were still far enough in its wake that the pilots could not see it with their naked eyes, could not realize that it wasn't the true Jaina Solo. The Yuuzhan Vong pursuers were good. They were gaining faster than he expected on the missile. With his sensors superior to the missile's, Char drew a course revision on his screen, sending the missile on a path that would take it past mine after mine, while giving more and more pursuers the chance to approach it. He executed and sent the course revision, then lost sight of his sensor board as Beelyath sent the B-Wing into a veering turn that crushed Char into his restraints and caused his vision to blur, all despite the starfighter's inertial compensators.
"Comfortable?" Beelyath croaked.
"Huh?" Char grunted. "Sorry, I was sleeping."